Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
Are you gonna get me the
ball? I'll get you the ball.
I hope he didn't kill somebody.
This is 11 Personnel. I am Nick Roush. He's Adam Luckett. It's day two without sports. Found a lady sitting on my couch. Apparently, she's my wife. She seems nice, though.
The Leecher.
Which, honestly, that meme from Mike Leach, that seems like something he, like a real problem he has. Because how much time is Mike Leach spending at home not doing football things?
Oh, just ball coaches in general, man, right now. Are probably getting a little cabin fever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't go to the football facility. What do you...
Yeah. I'm just going to say, we recorded last week on Tuesday, or Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
It feels like we haven't recorded in like 6 months.
I mean...
You've heard all of it from radio shows, from everything else you listeners have consumed. But, man, it feels like we're living in a...
The sky's fallen out since then. Just since we were at the NFL Combine, that feels like it was not even a month ago.
I know.
It was not even a month ago. It was snowing, and football was happening. There was so much and now, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
The day I saw the New York Post? It said the day sports stopped. The day sports world stopped. That was like their headline.
It's like the day the music died.
Yeah.
It really is. But we're going to keep on marching along. We're not going to be all doom and gloom. Because here's the thing, folks. Football is 24/7. Even when it's not being played, it's happening.
And if you're anything like me, and you have a wife that is now stuck at home, do things like paint your house in 3 days. So you might need something to do. So that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
If you're doing some extra housework that you weren't normally doing, pop in the AirPods
Maybe take the dog on a walk. Mm-hmm. You know, anything to get out of. Poor Luckett, man. I'm lucky enough to where that my wife's pregnant and she has like a national board obligation that she has to get to anyway. So luckily, because I would have had my whole house repainted. We'd probably have a new deck by now. Mm-hmm. I'm just consider myself lucky, but not all of you all are as lucky. So good luck. Good luck with that cabin fever. Because it's going to be happening for the foreseeable future. A lot of things have been moving around, have been canceled. The spring game officially announced all spring activities.
SEC officially joined the party. I believe the ACC.
Yeah, they were the first one, but essentially from now until the end of the academic year, which is June 30th. My anniversary. So happy anniversary, honey. All things are canceled from now until then.
Right.
And
for football, that can mean the freshmen that are signing this legendary coming 2020 class.
They're a month behind.
Yeah, usually they come like middle of June, early June.
June 7th, I think, report date. Yeah.
So that's going to get pushed back now, you would think.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there won't be that early summer session of classes to get them there on campus early. In the immediate future, I spoke to Calvin Taylor in an interview today that you all can read about or listen to that we had on Kentucky Roll Call. It's on the website, KSR, as well. But he's still kind of in a tailspin because he was one of four or five guys that has a legit shot at being a late pick that had to go prove, you know, that had to perform well at Pro Day. Pro Day's out. Yep.
Iowa was holding it without anybody, and they were going to film it and send it to NFL teams.
Uh-huh.
I thought that might – that. I guess we have to see how things go. But, yeah, it's sounding like that's not even a possibility now.
Because because Kentucky's campus is effectively shut down. They're going to have some people slowly get on campus over the next few days as they're moving people out. But, I mean, Calvin was still just saying, like, I'm just trying to figure out where I can train, you know, because these gyms are shut down.
You need equipment to train.
Yeah. And so some people, they're doing different alternatives. But just for those guys' sake in general, like Lynn Bowden, this probably won't hurt him because he put out a lot of good stuff on film. But like a guy like Ahmad Wagner.
Well, anybody that went to the combine, like the real deal combine,
they're fine.
Which is the majority of the picks.
Yeah.
That's fine. But like the guys you see every year drafted in like the 6th, 7th round. Georgia Safo Ajay, he got drafted because the Giants went to UK's Pro Day.
Man, he crushed it.
Like what they saw, and they picked him late. So for guys like Calvin Taylor, Ahmad Wagner, those type of guys that really needed to show something there to limited NFL personnel teams but would still have something on tape, that opportunity is gone for them now.
Well, and especially in Wagner's case because he's got, what, 24, I mean, quality snaps? Where the ball's where he's being targeted.
Right.
I mean, like, he has a very limited amount of film, but he just has all this athleticism and untapped potential. Somebody sees him do a crazy vertical leap, boom.
And it goes for NFL teams, too, because now they can't get the medicals on these guys.
No. And
as of right now.
Now, Calvin said that they can still communicate with these NFL teams, but it's not happening as regularly because
Skype, FaceTime, they can do all that type of stuff.
But it's not the same. Like, a lot of these guys, they just want to meet him. And they would be showing up throughout spring practice and kind of talking events and then going and meeting with these guys after they worked out. That's kind of the general day-to-day when spring practice is happening. All that's out of the equation now. So their draft future is uncertain. We do know the draft is staying put at April 23rd. And there's searching creative options to be able to broadcast it. But obviously players will not be flying to Las Vegas to walk. Man, we're missing out on the pontoons, though, across the Bellagio Fountains. Yeah. Man, I was...
Vegas shut down. The Wynn closing all their casinos.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, it's a responsible thing to do, but this is...
You know it's real when Vegas is
stopping. Yeah, nothing ever stops Vegas, except COVID-19, the coronavirus. So the show will go on in that respect. NFL free agency, that's still going on.
Tom Brady. Well, after you hear this, you probably know where he's going. But
it's the Bucs, though, right?
You think? I think that makes the most sense. I just have a hard time seeing him wearing that.
Yeah, that's the big thing is we can't get it passed. But here is my spin zone for Jack Pilgrim, who our colleague is a diehard Patriots fan. He's quite a loser about it, and when I mean loser, he's like the like. God, stop being such a douche, Jack. Like, it really, he's Mr. Celtics, Patriots fan, diehard through and through. Tom Brady, his man's leaving him. But the alternative is that Brady could be playing with his boy, Mike Edwards. So,
yeah,
that's my spin zone for Jack, is that maybe Jack can be friends with Brady one day. And when I say friends, like maybe go to a game.
Maybe
like,
Mike Edwards can be friends with Brady. That's even a long shot.
How cool would it be if you're Mike Edwards, though, just like the thought of picking off Tom Brady passes in practice and not Jameis Winston, which the numbers would go down. Yeah.
I saw a thing on Twitter today. Everybody knows Jameis had 30 interceptions last year.
Yeah.
He also had like 25 passes that were dropped that could have been intercepted.
My favorite part about all of this isn't like, because honestly, as much as, like, there were times in my life where I was a big Patriots hater, I really learned to appreciate them in recent years because of just their greatness. Wherever he goes, they're not going to be as good. You can't convince me otherwise. Like, you just can't. Unless it was with the Titans. That was the only team that I was like, okay, there's a lot around him. They're going to be good. Kind of like Peyton going to the Broncos. In this case, okay, yes, the Bucs got Mike Evans and
Chris Godwin.
Yeah. Okay, yes, they got that. They got Bruce. But you got to be able to stretch the defense out. He doesn't have that arm anymore. So it kind of makes me upset, but what excites me is the prospects of who's going to be his replacement. And they're talking about trading for Andy Dalton.
And I saw Cam Newton today, some people brought up.
Oh, man, either of those or Jameis signing, that would make me happy. Like, the possibilities just of Bill Belichick. Like, imagine Bill Belichick's face when Jameis Winston, like, throws an interception. Like, it will take years off of his life.
I'm just ready to see what that looks like, just Patriots and Belichick. Because it feels like he's wanted this for a little bit to prove that he just doesn't, I mean, he doesn't need Brady. Like,
yeah.
He can still win at a high level, even without the greatest quarterback ever.
It's a pretty big gamble, though.
And they've won when Brady's had to sit out, like the 4-game suspension a couple years ago.
Yeah, but those are, I mean, he made Matt Castle. He got Matt Castle paid.
Mm-hmm. He got Jacoby Brissett paid, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. That's I hope, though, so we're recording on Tuesday. Brady made that announcement this morning that he's not going to the Patriots. I hope this drags out for like 3 or 4 days before he announces which team he's going to. Just trickle out this NFL news as long as we can, because we're not going to get it forever. And from a Kentucky standpoint, Randall Cobb teaming up with Lonnie Johnson.
Yep, late Monday night.
Going from the Cowboys to the Texans, which...
So Randall Cobb, this will be his, what, like 11th year in the NFL coming up? That sound right?
They gave him a 3-year deal, too. Which I'm sure only like one or two is guaranteed, and they can cut him afterwards.
But a good chunk of that money was guaranteed. Speaking of Texans, man.
What? Okay. Folks, I think you all are well aware of my opinions on Scott Frost at this point. I don't like him. Think he's overrated, overhyped. Bill O'Brien is my Scott Frost. But I think Bill O'Brien, too, is like... He's almost like Kiffin-esque in that he like fails upwards. Like, they gave him a promotion to general manager this year after that catastrophe against the Chiefs. Like, each year, what do they say whenever the Texans are playing? They got to get somebody to protect Deshaun Watson. They're going to get that guy killed. They're going to get that man. So what does he do? He goes out and trades for a running back and gets rid of the best weapon. DeAndre Hopkins, yes, he's old. But he's not like... He's got 3 good years left in him, at least.
Yeah, here's the thing with all that. Like, obviously in the NFL, the big thing now is like striking when your quarterback's on his rookie deal, because then you have more cap flexibility for every other position. So you would think that you need to do everything you can while Deshaun Watson's on his rookie deal, so that would maybe keep DeAndre Hopkins. But even if you realize that, We're too far away. We're not going to catch anybody yet. We have this asset in Hopkins. Let's try to get something for him for the future. But they don't do that.
No.
Go and get a running back that's older and a running back that's averaged under 4 yards per carry the last 2 seasons. So you get a downgrade in talent for a guy that's going to have probably a shorter shelf life than the rest of DeAndre Hopkins' career. And then you look at the Texans. Who are they going to throw to on the outside? They don't have a first-round pick. They don't pick until number 57 late in the second round. Love Randall Cobb, but then they add, I mean, he's just a slot receiver.
Yeah, and he's also not what he once was. He doesn't have that same get-up. Right. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in the league, you know, 10, 11 years.
I mean, I guess they have the one dude who's always hurt.
Will Fuller.
Yeah, who, great when healthy, but, I mean, he's hurt every other week with a hammy or a groin. I don't know if he's a SoFo guy, but he strikes me as a SoFo guy.
Played in Notre Dame. Well, let's find out. I think he's from California. That sounds right.
If he's Southern California, that might as well be the same.
Let's look it up here.
Oh, man, when you look up Will Fuller injury is the first thing that comes up.
Philadelphia.
Philly? He's from Philly and he's that soft? Dave Lackford, I'm disappointed in your Philadelphia. Like, come on. That is incredibly disappointing. Either way, you know what I like, though, is that Bill O'Brien, this dumb move by Bill O'Brien, like everything in the world feels off right now, but Bill O'Brien putting out a wet fart as his first move as acting GM is just, okay, everything's normal. Like, it's fine.
Turns out that those are 2 different jobs that require 2 people. And if they're not going to require 2 people, you probably should have someone that's probably a little bit better than Bill O'Brien doing that.
Oh, man.
And Bill O'Brien, man, I mean... Because he's on the playoffs like 4 out of 6 years he's been a head coach. He's been a respectable head coach.
And I'm – because that's the ultimate – I think what we're seeing in NFL free agency right now is that average is good and it's breaking through past that average. Because especially in the quarterback market right now, where you're in a transitional period where the guys who were dominant for a long time are aging out. Philip Rivers is on his last stand. Tom Brady's on his last stand. We're only going to have a couple more years of Big Ben. There's another Drew Brees. He's and Drew Brees' decision. If you're the Saints, you're probably like you're kind of putting him in a tough spot. I think they're
yeah, but Drew Brees is New Orleans Saints football at this point.
But is it Tom Brady though? Like that's the dilemma that these teams are being put in, In Breeze's case, it's forcing them to have to let Bridgewater go, and now that's up in the air as to if it's going to be Carolina. I know the Bears were trying to make moves. Bridgewater, he is one of the hottest, most sought after guys because they've seen that he's a steady ship, and I guess the thought in the NFL is, all right, if we can get longevity and not just completely tanking our team, Jameis Winston, then you have value.
Yeah,
And that's the same kind of goes back to Bill O'Brien where it's like, well, you can't fire the guy because he's taking you to the playoffs, but you're not going to succeed with him. And trying to get that supporting gas gathered to break through is much easier said than done.
Yes, that's why you see teams flirting around that 9-7, 8-8 is the worst place to be in the NFL.
And now the Vikings they gave Kirk Cousins more money because they're in that same boat of like, we're going to the playoffs, we're close.
But we just really catch a couple breaks.
Yeah, and I guess that's what they're telling themselves, but it's not giving them any breaks.
Right.
And frankly, it's kind of hilarious to watch these teams pay these quarterbacks this much money. And I'm just thankful that we have this to discuss. I really am.
Yeah, I this is the most popular NFL free agency has been, I would assume, ever. With number one, Brady, but just there's nothing really else to talk about right now.
Well, hold on, Adam Luckett. Hold on, because the biggest coronavirus move in the Commonwealth right now was also became official this morning. The Kentucky Derby will not be run on the first Saturday in May since World War II. Back then, they still ran the race like regular until the last year of the war. Like, I don't know why they waited until it was almost won, but they banned horse racing in 1945, and Matt Wynn said, the Kentucky Derby will be ran every year in perpetuity as long as there are, even if there are only two people watching and two horses running. VE Day happened, the ban was lifted, and a month later they ran the Derby on June 7th, 1945, I believe. And fast forward 76 years, give or take?
Yeah, sure.
That sounds about right. And now it's podcast moving math from the first Saturday in May to the first Saturday in September, Labor Day weekend, the opening of college football season.
Before we get into that, do they run it at night?
No.
You don't think so? No, you don't even think that's on the table?
I mean, if you count night as like 7, but it's not going to be like prime time. I can't.
I mean, this is the year to do it.
Oh, shit, man, that'd be awesome, though.
Because, I mean,
like, if you started races at like 3 and had like, because they always run like three stakes going into it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had like the Derby at like 9 Eastern?
Well, the only way they can do it, and I think this is on the table, I think we're going to get into that, is college football start on time? I think that's a legit question.
Yeah, yeah. And as of right now, that's the big conundrum that we're facing is because of TV rights deals that NBC has with Notre Dame, to move it to the fall, NBC's like, our broadcast team, our primary broadcast team with Mike Tirico and the gang is focused on Notre Dame football. And that weekend they're off because Notre Dame gets a week 0 game against Navy in Ireland.
As of right now.
Which, taking your Navy to Ireland, you know, you'd think you're starting a war, but that's actually not the case. But so that's week 0. Mm-hmm. That gives the opening for September 5th. And so they're like, all right, well, we're going to do it then because Breeders' Cup's in November, and we can't have the two that close to one another. I think Notre Dame's other open date was like 2 weeks before. And just
10-24, so their other open date. I've got it up right now.
Yeah, and so that's might just be a week, two weeks before the Breeders' Cup. So they don't want to do that. So this is what made most sense from a horseman standpoint and from, we'll at least have a three-day weekend and – you know, we don't know how long this kind of shutdown is going to be, but this feels like if we give ourselves 4 months, this will be a nice cushion, to at least get back to normalcy. Now, from a personal standpoint, no person is more heartbroken over potentially having to choose between Kentucky football and the Kentucky Derby. Because, folks, I love the Kentucky Derby more than people in Oklahoma love Texas Roadhouse.
That's a lot of love.
It's a lot of love. Y'all don't understand. It's a big deal. I let one friend convince me, just miss this year, buddy. We'll go to a bachelor party. It'll be the only one you miss. You can go to the rest of them from here on out. Well, now I think I jinxed it. I think it's my fault that this is happening because Kentucky football is probably the biggest thing in my life. It's my job. It's what I do every day. And what could be an historic season is currently slated to open on the same time date as the Kentucky Derby. Now,
we don't know the time of game, mate. But yeah, that's what
if all things were normal, it'd probably be a noon kickoff on SEC Network. Now, from my understanding, I was going to go on a long rant about, like, please, Mitch Barnhart, for the love of God, make this happen. Before I even went on that, I've heard that Kentucky is already efforting to accommodate. Because here's the thing. They are competing for a lot of the same audience. And they don't want to open this big, It's a big season, and they don't want it to open in a half-ass empty stadium. This could be their first big event in months on UK's campus, and they can't afford for it to have a lackluster attendance.
People are going to be thirsty.
Yes.
When sports start up again,
and that's
like I think this could, in a weird way, this is probably going to help the season ticket numbers over there.
Well, and that's why part of the reason why I'm like, Derby's never going to be on Labor Day again. I got to be there. I got to experience it because that. There's going to be a lot of just like, thank God we're finally out of the house. It's been 5 days. Folks, it's only that feeling is just going to grow over the next month. So it's going to be more and more pent up. So I think UK understands that, and I think they're working to move that game around.
SEC Network, every year, that Thursday, they show a game. It's been Texas A&M versus FCS for the last 3-4 years. If they get in there early enough, they can maybe be that game.
So I think if you're Mark Stoops, that's what you want. You want that Thursday night.
Then you have to think, remember the last Thursday night game, what Kentucky has to do because of what they depend on that parking lot for, where you almost have to cancel school that Friday.
I pulled up the, this isn't just the SEC, this is every damn team.
You looking at A&M schedule?
I'm trying to look at every SEC, A&M's for the fifth as well.
I mean, they haven't said who's in that game yet, but they always move somebody into that slot.
Okay, because Louisville got moved into that slot. They're probably going to get ESPN. And if you're Louisville, you're pumped because you got Thurby as your lead-in at Cardinal Stadium. Like, that's going to be a crazy-ass day.
Well, that gets back gets to another question.
How drunk is Cardinal Stadium?
How packed does Cardinal Stadium parking lot get for Thurby?
I don't know because I always walk.
I mean, that's an honest question to ask because they're going to have to shut off parking. How is that going to work together with a football game being that day
and whatnot? Man.
But the reason they're able to do that, though, is because I think Louisville's playing on Thursday. The reason
that
Derby's going to be on
that Saturday is because they don't have to conflict with Louisville. But that's going to be crazy. If you're Mark Stoops, though, you want that Thursday game or hell, you even
Friday.
Take a Friday because
Friday
here's the thing.
Awesome.
In my mind, Sunday's the best, just from a pure viewership standpoint. ESPN ruined that Sunday. It used to be a great day to watch football, and now they've made it to where they only have one megacast on Sunday night. And last year, it sucked. Oklahoma beat the snot out of Houston. It wasn't even close. It was really infuriating. We have all these games Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then we get nothing on Sunday. That used to be the Kentucky Louisville game every year, Sunday, Labor Day, like 3:30 kickoff. It was hotter than hell, but it was fun to watch. Now,
move it to week zero if you could.
Or move it to week zero. But Stoops wouldn't want to go Sunday because you got to go to Florida the next week.
Yes.
And you don't want to do that on a short week. Mm-hmm. Like, you just don't. Even though this Eastern Michigan team, folks, we're going to talk about them when it comes, but they suck.
I have started a document of this is what I'm doing.
While Taylor's been painting the house, you've been starting documents.
I have made a little portfolio of UK schedule and tidbits to know. So I've already started charting for 2020.
And Eastern Michigan.
And yes, but getting to my point, Eastern Michigan, the offense could be okay. The backup quarterback that's stepping in, played last year and put up some good numbers, has got some receivers back. But they lost their offense coordinator, and the defense is going to be should be pretty bad again. They lose. They had a good secondary on a bad defense last year. They lose every impactful player in that secondary.
You also have the revenge factor. Mm-hmm. You say you won by what, 3 touchdowns last year, despite that injury.
It looks like there's no Sunday games just to butt in for that scheduled yet.
Yeah, but there will eventually be one. So that I think that's an option. But to your point too, Luckett, I don't know if if this was a discussion we had off air at the combine or what, but these games too are supposed to be this is a second half you rest the starters. So I think there's in a world you can spin it where Sunday still works, but for everybody's sake, you can't have Kentucky football and Kentucky Derby on the same day. You just can't. And I know that there's a lot of people listening who don't get it. It's just a stupid horse race. But, like, it's a big deal for people around the city of Louisville. We spend weeks just doing nothing. And it's not just because it's a good excuse to drink. The only derby my dad has missed since high school was for his dad's funeral. Like, that's the kind of dedication you have for some folks around here when it comes to derby. Other people, they are annoyed by it. But I think you also have to consider, even if you aren't a Derby diehard and you live in the city of Louisville and there's a Kentucky football game against Eastern Michigan, do you want to get out in Derby traffic and then go fight Lexington traffic and then drive home right when Derby's going home and fight Derby traffic again just to go watch Kentucky see Eastern Michigan?
What do you think the crowd for Derby's going to be like on a different day?
It is going to be insane.
Do you?
I do. And I know that it would involve I think the crowd for travelers, when they talk, like when you watch the broadcast, they really hype up all these people from across the country going. It would hurt the celebrity. You're not gonna have the NFL players that you normally do, and you're not gonna have the celebs, but I think the infield
could have NBA players this time that usually couldn't go. Well, of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, well they might be still in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be weird, but I think just from a...
Yeah, we don't know how any of this is going to shake out.
If all is well and everybody stays healthy and we get through the coronavirus pandemic, and by August things are back to normal, I think it'll be a record-setting derby because people will just want to be there for the oddity of it. But, like I said, we don't know where that's going to be, and it could affect the start of football season, Adam Luckett.
Right, because everything is canceled now. So at this time, we would obviously have spring football going on.
Mm-hmm.
But even after that, you have the workouts with the strength coach. The coaches can't have contact. They're supposed to be going through team workouts right now, and all that is gone. So now all the players are at home. So how do they work out? How do they stay in shape?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming they've sent them, like, a workout plan. If you can do this, do that. If you can't do this, do this, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But now we don't know, like, how long is this going to last? Like, really, as a country, we just need to get through these next 2 weeks and just...
reevaluate.
Yeah. Then I think there's going to be a lot of that. A lot of reevaluation stages going on. But when you look at the sports world, specifically college football, it's the one sport that's the least impacted as a schedule-wise right now, meaning that it's the farthest away.
Right.
But you don't know what like the ripple effect's going to be because it's messed up the entire part of the calendar. That's not even talking about recruiting.
Yeah. Well, which I thought it was oddly timed that Dekel Crowder said he was going to announce in May.
Mm-hmm.
Which, good on him from a PR standpoint of, you know, nobody's doing anything.
Jagger Burton.
Let's grab some news.
It's probably only going to be...
like those kids can't visit anywhere. Yeah. And they visited UK a bunch of times.
And he said that Kentucky's going to be his last visit, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Ohio State's going to be his first.
Mm-hmm.
But the other three, those are up in the air.
Yeah. You know? And that Ohio State's one of
them
recruiting.
Wanted to be, you know, he wanted to get out to Oregon for one of them.
Right.
And
my impression of his, he really just wants to go to Oregon because when he was a kid, he loved Oregon. And when he was a kid, that was Chip Kelly and they were making out like gangbusters.
Yeah, you can't blame him for that, for sure.
Yeah, and honestly, that's how I would want to play out the recruiting process too. Like, hell, fly me out to all these places. Mm-hmm. But
well, if it's my kid, I'm like, your ass, we're going on some of these visits.
Exactly. And they wine and dine you, you know, like, right. Hell yeah, you get that dinner at Jeff Ruby's. Mm-hmm. But I think for the local kids, it's going to help Kentucky. But, you know, think about June. So let's just.
The summer's become really more important with this new recruiting calendar.
And so now they can't even host them. I mean, right. June was going to be official visit month. Mm-hmm. And
the just camps throughout the summer that they have for not just this class, for classes
big.
Down the road.
I mean, that's where John Sharman told Jagger Burton, hey, you should try offensive line instead of defensive line. Mm-hmm. And then the next year, he's a top 100 recruit. Like, those camps are a big damn deal for recruiting. Those are completely gone. So the ripple effect's big, but just from on the college football season in general, it hasn't encroached on training camp yet because there would still be around report date in July. And I think it was typically the last week of July that reporting would start happening. But just everybody needs to keep that in mind moving forward as more and more stuff kind of keeps getting pushed back. That the hard cutoff date for training camp, week zero people would be like July 16th and July 23rd for the rest mm-hmm. of college football.
I have a sneaky suspicion that they're probably going to add a few extra practices in camp. Maybe let them start sooner since everybody pretty much missed spring ball. Kentucky got some practices in.
Yeah.
But Georgia, Alabama, they didn't even start.
How much do you think missing spring practice, what impact do you think it has on this Kentucky football team?
I think it impacts a few positions, obviously. I think some of the spots are – have questions about
left guard,
right? But
receiver,
but your quarterback, I mean, all he was doing was throwing. But I think that hurts, that now that they're separated, he can't really go out and throw, you know, get timing down. I think that hurts. But for the most part, it's pretty set in stone. Kentucky's got an old team for next year.
Thank God this didn't happen a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
What would that secondary have looked like?
Oh, who knows? Yeah. And there was obviously the concern about, you know, the first year coordinator too on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're settled in a little bit, but there's going to be a 10th assistant head coach that the team hasn't seen.
Yeah.
Until fall camp opens.
Nope. There is a new guy on campus though.
There is. Learned that yesterday,
by
Monday.
The way, we butchered his name. Seven. Greg Minuski. We butchered that name 100 times before we started. I was saying Polzinski, Kazuski, Greg Minuski.
And any last name with a ski ending?
Yeah.
It's a pretty good football name.
Oh, definitely. He's got the football coach goatee, too,
mm-hmm.
When it looks like he's just been living with the headset his entire life. And he has for the last 20 years, but not at the collegiate level. He has been bouncing back between the Colts, the Redskins, the San Diego Superchargers. San Diego.
Yeah, over a decade of NFL coordinator experience.
Yes. He started coaching in 2001 in the NFL ranks mm-hmm. with linebackers and spent the last three seasons coordinating the defense of Washington Redskins. Shout out to all the Redskins fans who are Kentucky fans who are just like, keep him away from us. He ruined the defense. It's like,
I got a few of those too.
It's also like, hey, who was on the Redskins defense that was?
Well, he's also not coaching UK either.
Exactly. He's a quality control guy. He's just a football guy who watches film, who helps game planning. And as Freddie Maggard pointed out on KentuckySportsRadio.com, that film study isn't just on the opposing team. It's a lot of watching film on your own guys, saying, hey, DeAndre Square.
Self-scouting.
What the hell are your shoulders aren't square here, Square. Get them squared, Square. Mm-hmm. Square. Did I say square enough?
Mm-hmm.
But self-scouting is the
And Minuski, I think he could be used as a guy that maybe coaches the coaches. Like maybe coach, since he's had experience with Brad White, it's somebody Brad White can lean on and take maybe some criticism from or maybe some stuff he needs to do better. And also just another brain in the room
mm-hmm.
who's, you know, obviously a highly, highly football intellectual.
Oh, he's seen some stuff.
Right. And he's 3-4 background. And then when you look at his defensive finishes, and this is Football Outsiders DVOA rankings, which is like their efficiency rankings. you know, middle. He's middle of the road in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But he's, I mean, he's had some bad finishes in the 20s, but he's had a lot in the teens. And then he had his defense ranked fifth in 09. I believe that's when he was with the 49ers.
Yes. And that was yes. Super Bowl?
I think it was a couple years before the Super Bowl.
Man, he's been close on Super Bowl wins.
I don't think. See, I think when Harbaugh took the job, that's when he left.
That's when he got out.
I'm
okay,
pretty
okay.
sure.
He also, I noticed he got drafted the year after the Redskins won their last Super Bowl. Just kind of, and not their last Super Bowl. I think they won a Super Bowl, and then he left again, and they won another Super Bowl.
Yeah, he was with the Niners when they had Mike Nolan. He was his defensive coordinator when Harbaugh came in.
I like Mike Nolan. Wore the tie on the sideline. Mm-hmm. Yeah, real classy. Him and Mike Singletary. Just kind of got some screws loose.
Can't do it. Won't do it.
But Minuski, it's kind of funny. We thought going into this. Man, Mark Stoops, he's going to have Mike Stoops working for him. That's kind of weird. Mark used to work for Mike. Well, this is kind of shoe on the other foot, except with Brad White, where Brad White worked for Minuski when he was with the Colts for 2 years as when he started out as an assistant there. And now Minuski is going to be working for Brad White. So,
and it's worth noting, Brad White, he was off the field. He was in a kind of a quality control role with the Colts.
Yeah,
and then he moved into a field role while Minuski was there. So when it came to promoting him, the guy Kentucky just hired
thinks highly of him. Yeah.
Right.
And here's what makes this the reason why this is significant news, folks. How many people in Nick Saban's staff are like folks joke that it's like you go to it's coach rehab with Nick Saban. You had the guy Mike Locksley go from New Mexico State.
You get Saban's sprinkle dust.
Exactly.
Magic dust.
Mike Locksley flames out fast at New Mexico State, goes to Alabama, and then gets hired at Maryland. Like, instant promotion. Lane Kiffin goes, gets the sprinkle fairy dust, and gets a head job at FAU. Now he's back in the SEC. Right now, you've got Mike Stoops, who's waiting to get that more of that dust, and Butch Jones, which I can understand why I would take each of them. They got a little bit more dust that they need to get on them. Mm-hmm. Now Stoops, he's got a guy of his own who spent 20 years in the NFL and who's trying to get his name back in there. He's switching things up. And now Stoops gets to have his own guy in that similar form of fashion.
Stoops had a guy by the name of John Jancic, was in the same role a couple years ago. He was Butch Jones' defensive coordinator at Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I believe he got fired. And then he landed on – then he got Colorado State's DC job. Now, I think he's out of a job now. Now
yes,
that
Bobo got fired.
But – It's been a role where somebody's came in, worked under them, and landed on their feet somewhere.
And this is the highest profile of those moves. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, too, folks. I was just doing some looking at the numbers. I don't know how they got better. I guess because teams played in bowl games and got a lot of points scored on them. But even when Kentucky got passed on a lot, it's the second-ranked pass defense in the country. Second. I thought it was fourth. No, second. There's a lot of good things about this defense, and bringing in somebody with NFL experience is, I think I would categorize that as a good idea, Adam Luckett.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Another thing about the pass defense numbers, a lot of it was because they were shrinking the game.
Yeah.
So there's less plays.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Oh, but you know what? You bet your sweet ass we're still going to talk about it.
Yeah, but even if you look just yards per attempt, they were 13th. Opponent's QB rating, 12th, so top 15 at worst. So, I mean, for a young secondary and a pass rush, an edge pass rush that for most half of the season was kind of missing, and then they kind of turned it on late.
With Bookie.
Mm-hmm.
Really turned it on with Bookie. So, there's a lot to be excited about, but unfortunately, it's another one of those things where you know.
And I'm starting to get the suspicion with Mike Stoops. Maybe, just maybe, he thinks he's going to get a big role at Alabama here soon, whether it's on the field coaching or maybe coordinator or co-coordinator or something.
Yeah.
Because I know Pete Golding, who's the DC now, if Bama comes back and has a big year, he's a young guy, he's going to have some suitors probably pretty soon. And then maybe after that, he possibly sees as a chance for him. Or maybe he's got a connection with Sark when he gets a head coaching job.
Yeah.
And maybe he can go with him wherever he goes.
Is Tom Brady, did he pick a spot? Is that what that was?
Phil Rivers, 1 year deal with the Colts, $25 million.
My buddy's a Colts fan. He was like, there's a lot of people I'd rather have than Phil Rivers. I like Phil Rivers.
There's though. A lot of people I'd rather not have than Phil Rivers, too. But he did not have a good Jacoby year last Brissett? Year. I'd take Phil Rivers over him.
Man, Phil Rivers is that little shot put thing. Yeah. Like, which.
He did not have a great year.
Man, I don't know how I missed out on this thing, but the way Cam Newton types, it's really bizarre. Did you see the Instagram message thing he had?
Yeah, I stopped after 10 words because it was giving me a headache.
Also, how incredible is it that a guy like Cam Newton, I mean, he was the MVP, it felt like yesterday, and Von Miller just ruined him.
Things move fast in the NFL. They were 15-1 that year, the Panthers.
Oh, God. What year was that? Was that
15, I think. Does that sound right?
That sounds right.
When did he win MVP? Yeah, he was MVP.
In 2015.
15, yeah. That's what I thought.
And now they're looking to trade him.
Moves fast, man.
Which, you know what? So, okay, let me ask you this question. If you're Teddy Bridgewater, New England Patriots or Joe Brady in Carolina?
If you're Bridgewater?
Yeah. Money is equal. All things equal. Belichick and the Patriots or Joe Brady, offensive coordinator, Carolina Panthers, and Christian McCaffrey.
I'd probably pick the Patriots. You're playing for Belichick on the division, whereas in that division, it's the Saints division as of right now. And you're risking – I think Rule's going to be good, and Brady, it all seems like he's going to be good, but you don't know. McDaniels is proven as a good OC.
Do you want to be the guy who replaces Tom Brady, though? Are you ready to handle that?
Yeah, I mean – I don't know.
It's tougher than it should be. Like, you would think it'd be a no-brainer for the Patriots, but who's he going to throw to in New England?
That's true.
What's that guy's name? N'Keal?
N'Keal Harry?
Yeah.
He's going to throw to McCaffrey 18 times for the Panthers.
Hand it off to Reggie Bonifant.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, they don't have a bunch of weapons either off the top of my head.
So, to peel behind the curtain, folks, we've got some fun topics that we've saved up for. We've got three pretty evergreen topics that we've got saved up for a podcast.
Just want to say this before we get going.
Okay.
Jason Witten is still playing, but it's not going to be for the Cowboys.
He
signed a 1 year deal with the Las Vegas Raiders.
Oh, God.
Why is he still playing, man?
I mean,
he can only run that stick route for 5 yards so many times.
I mean, good for him, but why is anybody paying him?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all. All right, but we've got three pretty evergreen topics. And the thing is I think we could almost do an entire podcast on each one.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm debating if we do two in the next one or all three or. Do we save all three for that one? Let's give them one.
Okay.
Okay. How about we do college basketball coaches and their
college football counterparts.
Yes, yes. Let's go ahead and do that one because – so essentially this is an exercise where we take college basketball coaches and we say, hey, who would they be in college football? And before we do that, we want to remind you that throughout this process when you're working from home – we highly advise you to get some SOAR Performance shipped to you at your home to stay hydrated throughout these trying times. Because here's the thing. When you're working from home, you do a lot of sitting around. You're probably not getting up and stretching like you should be. You're probably not drinking as much water as you need to. Your feet start cramping up. My hands, I'm washing my hands so much, it's starting to get this weird thing. Stay hydrated with SOAR Performance with Shield. They've got a ton of different products that you can get at home, deliver to your home, the Lexington-based all-natural beverage will make sure you're in the game, even though you're not in the office right now. Listen, it will keep you hydrated no matter what. Drink it, drinksword.com. And here's the thing, right now, local businesses are hurting. This is one way that you can support a local business and stay hydrated without any chemical additives. No dyes, flavored with real fruit, all clear and clean, healthy hydration that's all natural without preservatives. Get the electrolytes you need with Sword and Shield. Sword Performance, go to drinksword.com, get some Sword delivered to you today. Now, Adam Luckett, let's go through our SEC basketball coaches.
How do you want to start it?
Let's just go back and forth with some that we've come up with. Okay. And let's save Bruce Pearl and Cal for the end because that's some intense debating. It's going to be tough to figure out the perfect fit for each.
I've got one, and I think you have one for this one as well.
Okay.
Mike White, Florida.
Ooh, okay. This one was kind of tough.
Mm-hmm.
I went with Willie Taggart.
Okay.
Because they're up-and-coming guys that are hot names.
Mm-hmm. Really hot names.
Really hot names. But then when you see a little bit more of them, you're like, eh.
And they both replaced the guy that won a national championship.
Yeah. It's like, do we – we thought we really liked what we had here, mm-hmm. and then the more you see of him, you're like, oh, God, this isn't going to work out.
Mine was the guy Kentucky just played in the Belk Bowl, Justin Fuente. When Justin Fuente was hired, they were like, this is the perfect fit. He's going to win big at Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
It makes a ton of sense. When Mike White was hired, they're like, man, he dresses like Billy Donovan. He walks the sideline like Billy Donovan.
He's got the spiked hair.
This is going to work. And the early returns were good. Mike White's second year, they went to the Elite Eight. I believe in Fuente's first year, they made the ACC Championship, won 10 games. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it's kind of been like a slow decline for both of them. And so now I think they're both entering big seasons next year where it's kind of like put up or shut up time. For both, because I think both fan bases are getting pretty restless with both of them.
Right,
right. So for that one, I think that one was one I came up with quick. Because Fuente, just both, like, they're kind of in the same boat.
So Mike White would be Taggart if this was like 2 years later and he was fired.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Taggart already got the boot.
Taggart
Justin
flamed
Fuente.
Out fast.
Way too fast. Yeah. Whereas at least Fuente did get some good returns. I like Justin Fuente. Mike White is Justin Fuente. The next one is my favorite so far. And that's Ben Howland. Adam, look at who do you got for Ben Howland? Anybody?
Ben Howland, I picked Mark Richt. Okay, and let me explain why. Ben Howland, they start off fast. Like, Richt was a coordinator at Florida State before Big, where Howland won big at Pitt, won a couple Big East titles. Then he goes to a prestigious program in UCLA. Has some good returns. They went to a few
Final Fours,
recruited a bunch of one-and-dones. Georgia. Richt has some good returns. Won an SEC championship early. Had a bunch of double-digit win seasons. But then he flamed out because his offense has got stale. And that's a big reason for Howland. His offense got bad. And then they return and kind of – take a year off, return in kind of a weird spot. He goes to Mississippi State. Richt goes to Miami.
Richt grows a goatee, and he's like he's like prison Mike almost.
Richt doesn't
– He's the U Mike.
Richt doesn't last as long, but if he kept – going at Miami, like he was going to go 7-5, 8-4,
which is every what Howland's
year, which is kind of in a similar way.
Farted around with the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, but I think he is in personality is just like that Yankee carpetbagger they just fired down there, just like Joe Moorhead. They just don't fit in. There's something about their personality. It's like, dude, what are you doing in Starkville, Mississippi? You don't belong here, buddy.
It's not a normal place to fit in either. I would imagine.
That's fair enough. I think I'm going to have to start giving my mine out before yours because yours have much more like pedigree. Reminds a lot just about their face and how they don't fit in because that was the thing with Joe Moorhead. It was always square peg. And when Ben Howland got hired, you were like, wait, this dude's going from Westwood to Starkville? Like, has he been to Starkville? Does he know what he's getting into? So, very stark differences between both of them. And don't call me Shirley. But I think you're kind of more right on when it comes to Mark Richt, just because if only Ben Howland was like kind of a Jesus guy, then it'd be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Richt, big Jesus guy. Big.
Because just 10 years ago, both those guys were but like the top. Like if they were doing coaching rankings 10 years ago.
Man, yeah.
They're both.
Cream of the crop.
They're both near the top. And years pass and they just fallen quickly.
Hope that didn't get into y'all's ears too bad. All right, next person. Tom Crean. And
this one was hard for me.
This one was easy for me. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah, I think I have the same answer you do.
Because him and his brother-in-law, Jim Harbaugh, they both make really weird faces. They've both had some success.
Mm-hmm.
And they both are very polarizing in that There's some people who love both of them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Indiana fans don't like Tom Crean, but I mean, especially when he did his kind of PR thing with Part of My Take, people are like, "Oh, it's Tom Crean guy. He's not so bad." Same goes for Harbaugh. I mean, hell, yeah, they interview him too. But some people like the khakis. They like his antics. Other people can't despise him. Like Tom Crean, he's flailing, his hair's going all over the place on the sideline. Jim Harbaugh slamming his headsets down. They're both very animated, passionate guys on the sideline. And even though Harbaugh's had more success, I guess Crean got a Final Four. And
early, yeah, with Marquette.
Yeah, and Harbaugh went to a Super Bowl. So
here's my thought. I think with this, we could also do this comparison. I think there's a lot of similarities between Michigan football and Indiana basketball.
Ooh, yeah. Here we go. Let's hear this out.
So, like, Michigan has all these wins, all this history, but they've won one national championship since World War II.
Is that it?
97, and it was a co-national championship. And people that watch the sport that year say, like, Nebraska, they think Nebraska would have beat them.
It was Eric Crouch, right?
No, that was before Crouch, I think. It was Eric Crouch. You're right. Yeah. So, I mean, it would have been close.
Right.
Whatever.
Back when we had co-national championships.
So, so really, Michigan, through their history, both Shimbeckler was the one coach who could really get after Ohio State's ass.
Mm-hmm.
And he won a bunch for them. And really, Indiana's had one coach, Bob Knight.
Yep.
And then you look at the last, whatever.
20 years.
They've had some really mixed results. They've run coaches in and out. They can't find the right mix. The only reason I didn't like this comparison is because Harbaugh's finishing in the top 15, top 20 with Michigan. So that would be like being like a 5 or 6 seed every year in the NCAA tournament.
Well,
where Crean was, he had some more highs, I think, because he won a Big Ten title.
Yeah.
But
he only got 2 Sweet 16s, though.
But he also had losing seasons and missing the tournament and stuff like that. Where Harbaugh came in right away after Michigan was losing, had put some losing records and fixed it quick, but he hasn't been able to get past that ceiling.
They're both really good at losing to rivals, too.
That's true.
One thing they have in common. Mm-hmm. Indiana, we all know very well that Purdue, even though they don't have more Final Fours or championships, Purdue just waxes that ass on a consistent basis.
They did it twice this year.
I think if you were a senior that just finished the school year at Purdue, I don't think you ever saw them lose to Indiana in basketball.
Damn.
It's wild. And they play twice a year. This isn't just Kentucky owning mm-hmm. Louisville. This is pure domination. Mm-hmm. So, that's as close as we can get, and I think that's a pretty solid comparison to go with. Kermit Davis, Ole Miss.
I had Jim McElwain.
Oh. See, I think there's a lot of Gary Patterson in him, and it's nothing to do with football
field. They just look like.
Okay, so here's the thing. Kermit Davis, he is the older brother that, like, started on this diet that the younger brother doesn't, like, refuses to get on, but keeps kind of, like, showing off, like, his new diet. And it doesn't look great on him. Like, ooh, you're glad for him that he's healthy, but it's kind of a weird look because it's just, you know, when you lose a lot of weight later in age, it's just kind of a weird look. But he's still shaming Gary at every family dinner on Thanksgiving, like, oh, so you're going to use that. You're going to use that gravy, and then Gary gets all red faced. He's like, you son of a bitch. It's stunning. Just pull up pictures of them next to each other, and it's you'll be surprised.
I picked McElwain just because, like, Kermit had this hot career starting off, as McElwain did when he got to Florida, and then got ran out of town, but it was for different reasons, where Kermit, like, he was at A&M, like, 20 years ago.
I didn't know that.
But he got a show cause for something. He had, like, an NCAA show cause for, like, 4 years.
Really?
So he goes to Middle Tennessee, and he carves out a nice niche where they're winning a lot. He builds kind of like a nice mid-major power, and I think we're going to see McElwain do that at Central Michigan if he stays there. Like, really be a good mid-major coach, but at the top level,
Everybody has their ceiling. Yeah. Right. And McElwain, right. I mean, hell, in 1 year at Central Michigan, he had him moving and grooving. And I think he was at Colorado State before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like,
yeah, they won their division last year.
He's been good at that mid-major level, so maybe we'll see with how. I mean, they should have been better this year with Brian Tyree. So I like that comparison right there. Man, I was stretching for this one, but for Jerry Stackhouse,
yeah, I couldn't really find one either. So I don't like my answer.
My thought, and they're not similar in personality, but I think they're similar in that the ADs were trying to make an out of the box hire. and get somebody from the pros, and that's Herm Edwards. Just because Arizona State was like, we're going to go to the pro model.
I had a similar answer.
And have the GM. We're going to bring in Herm Edwards, where Jerry Stackhouse probably, like, I think Jerry Stackhouse is a good coach. And, like, just from the kind of stuff he was doing to get guys open, he had no players last year, and they were doing a good job hanging around. But he's also not, like, this Mr. Motivator like Edwards. He's a quieter guy. They would do those split screens, and you would just, like, is Jerry Stackhouse ever going to open his mouth and talk? And the answer was typically no.
Mine was Carl Durrell, who just got hired at Colorado. NFL guy.
Who?
The Colorado's new head coach.
What's his name?
Carl Durrell.
Okay.
He's from the NFL, long story short.
Gotcha.
Came out of nowhere. Stackhouse came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They're both kind of mild-mannered guys. So that – but it took – that one I sat there and thought about a long time, and I couldn't really find one.
Who you got up next?
Okay. Let's see here. Okay, Buzz Williams. Dana Holgorsen. Just because they've had a lot of success, but they've kind of moved around a little too much. Like, you wouldn't think they would.
Right.
They're kind of eccentric. We saw Buzz Cam when Kentucky played down there.
And there's a lot.
You could do the same Holgorsen Cam and probably see a lot of the same stuff.
And they're also similar in that there's a very you either love him or hate him kind of thing with each of them.
Yeah.
I like that one. And they both play kind of different styles, too. And their highs are really high, and their lows can be really low. Yeah, Buzz Williams, and they both have weird hair, too.
Neither are great recruiters, but they usually get the team to play above their talent ceiling. They're never like a title contender, but they're always plucky, like a plucky underdog.
Plucky underdog, that's a great
another one. Rick Barnes.
So Adam Luckett suggested this idea. And as soon as he mentioned, like, his example, I was like, okay, I can't even – there's no point in me even investing.
Rick Barnes, Kirk Ferentz.
Yeah.
Been coaching for forever, like 30-plus years. Ferentz has stayed one place, and Barnes has had a little bit more recruiting success. But when you look at, like, their overall career, they've had a lot of really good seasons, some teams that were potential title contenders but were never really there. And then when they had that team, they kind of fell flat on their face. Tennessee last year, Iowa had a chance to go to the college football playoff, lost in the Big Ten championship because they really just couldn't score points. So that was mine. I would just they're good every year. Like, he wins every year. Like, they're competitive all the time, no matter what their talent. And usually when they have teams with lesser talent is when they do their best coaching job. But when they have some more expectations, they fall a little short. And Iowa always get somebody at home, it seems like, whether it's Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, whoever. And we've seen recently with Kentucky, they just can't – every year Tennessee gets them.
Can't win in Thompson Bowling.
Or
hell, this year was just like – God, you're right. Dang it, I don't want to think about that part of it, though. And they're both just kind of the most boring. They're very blasé.
64, 65 years old.
Just very bland, very vanilla. They don't play, like, the sexiest style of ball. But you know what? You punt a win, and you run inbounds plays that get 2 points.
Right.
And, like, you just got to be impressed by it. You just have to.
Yeah.
That's just the most appropriate one yet. And I think we've reached our final two.
Did you have anyone for Frank Martin? I had a hard time coming up.
There was some of these that I couldn't really Frank, because Frank Martin's weird in that he's had two really good teams. He had that team at Kansas State that lost to Xavier.
But even that South Carolina team was only a 7 seed. They just got hot.
Yeah, they got hot. But he still has a Final Four, and he's this enforcer type,
which
lends itself to college football.
Yeah,
but those guys typically don't stick around for a while.
I couldn't really find. I picked Pat Narduzzi. Because he was like this hotshot coordinator at Michigan State, whereas Martin was this hotshot young head coach at Kansas State. They take kind of a tough job, both of them, and they're competitive every year, but they're not really they're not really somebody you worry too much about if you're their competitor.
This is an early one, but I think it could be. Narduzzi fits better because he's got more of that hard ass in him. But
that's why I say they're both kind of. You see the TV cameras pick them up on the sideline. They're both kind of psycho.
Yeah.
That was really the sticking point.
I think Sam Pittman is going to be like that.
Yeah, that could be a good one.
And they're also like kind of media darlings. Like, people love, Like, Frank Martin goes viral once a year for some hard-ass mm-hmm. thing that people just like, this is the truth. Speak
and
the
he
truth,
does,
Frank
he does
Martin.
All kinds of radio interviews, TV interviews.
Yeah, well, like, with the year they had that big run, once they got out of it, he mm-hmm. was doing all the CBS stuff, you know, like, in the studio with Charles Barkley.
Right.
And you know, they're yucking it up with him.
Yeah.
So, I think either Sam Pittman or Narduzzi, we don't have the sample size.
We'll see. Yeah. Pittman could that. I could see that for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, the big ones. Bruce Pearl, John Calipari.
You want to start with Pearl first?
Let's start with Bruce Pearl, who I have two that I kind of wanted to throw off you and see what you thought. Because the thing about Bruce Pearl that makes him endearing to Kentucky fans is he's a real rah-rah shish kabob kind of guy. I mean, he gets fans doing things they otherwise normally wouldn't at certain places. And he also has a way of being endearing himself to the media. And he's bounced around a lot. And he's had success. He's been to a Final Four now. That was his big breakthrough last year. He finally was able to check that one box off. And I think there are a lot of people
that won an SEC tournament. Too, for the first time.
And I think people really doubted that he could get past that. Now, I think that draws comparisons to two people, but these are both national championship winning head coaches. And that's Ed Orgeron or Jimbo Fisher. I don't know which one I think is more like it, but I think a lot of them, they had many haters, but also many lovers, really good in the media, and who were told, all right, well, you know, there was especially with Coach O, there was a lot of gimmick, this guy's never going to be able to last. And yet, Bruce Pearl is like the perfect guy to get Auburn fans fired up, just like Coach O is the perfect guy to get LSU fans fired up. Mm-hmm. Do you think those are good or not?
I like those. I have a kind of a similar guy in that kind of tier of coaches, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think Orgeron win a national championship for right now passed him in that tier.
Yeah.
But this guy came from a small school, started out as a small school head coach like Pearl did.
Mm-hmm.
Worked his way up the ladder, eventually landing a big job. He has been in the trouble with the NCAA, has had victory stripped.
Rick Pitino?
He's a coach that I think any blue blood that's a really legit national championship contender say, yeah, he's a good coach, but I wouldn't want him at my school. He wins 8 to 11 games every year, but his team really can't. They're not on that level yet where they can really punch
that's
through.
That's true, yeah.
And it's Brian Kelly. They both have rosy red cheeks yelling at officials.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Pearl's obviously a little more behind the mic savvy, a little more outgoing.
Brian Kelly's
so that doesn't,
kind of a jerk.
That doesn't fit there.
Mm.
But
man, this is tough. Because you're right. In the sort of how you think of them as a coach, you think they're good but not great.
Right. Like, when Florida was open, and say Dan Mullen goes somewhere else, like if you ask Florida people after they needed a coach after McElwain left, if you were like, all right, Brian Kelly's taking the job, you'd have been like, but we could do better.
I think on the flip side, it's part of it's because Pearl's at Auburn, and Auburn fans would never want him to leave because it's freaking Auburn basketball. Mm-hmm. But like my brother-in-law's a Notre Dame fan, and he's already like, you know, getting a little restless.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's an itch there that, like, if Kelly isn't scratching it sometime soon, right, then he's going to be out.
And Kelly, he won Division II national championships at Grand Valley State, won a MAC title at Central Michigan, took Cincinnati to back-to-back BCS bowls, and then he's been at Notre Dame, and he's gone to a national championship, and he's gone to a college football playoff. He's had some roller coaster moments, but you look at the last 3 years, he's won 10 games, 12 games, 11 games. So, like, he's not, like, he's good. Like, he's not, but he's not in that upper tier. And that's where I would consider Pearl.
What makes this difficult, too, is that college football coaches are 10 times worse at being hype machines and P.T. Barnums and
they don't really have to do it.
Exactly. Right. They're the opposite, where instead of promoting their sport, mm-hmm. they're not trying to say anything. So, like, we're in college basketball. The stars are the coaches who have been at one place for 20 years
mm-hmm.
And, you know, have a way of spending stuff in the media. So that's why it's hard getting these two. I like going with Brian Kelly just from a pedigree standpoint, even though Pearl is obviously much more personable. Now, the ultimate one. John Calipari. If he were a college football coach, a lot of people, especially people that call into the Paul Feinbaum show, they like to compare Kentucky basketball and Alabama football. But when I watch a Nick Saban press conference, the only thing that Nick Saban and John Calipari have in common is that there's a Coca-Cola bottle on their podium.
Right, right.
Aside, Cal's over there trying to like make jokes and make the media laugh, and Nick Saban's over there like ready to fight him. And from when it comes to stuff they've done on the field, as much as we'd love to think that Kentucky's had as much success in basketball as Alabama has in football, that's not the case. It's just not. And in the way that Saban runs things, he is a micromanager that does things a certain way. It's a system. Whereas Cal, he's players first, and he molds his guys to a certain way, which makes him more like Nick Saban's counterpart.
Dabo.
Dabo.
I agree, man. And I agree 100%.
And as much as we – and here's the thing, too, with Dabo. Dabo is very similar in Cal in that – you really hate them or you really love them.
And how they talk, how they send messages through the media and how they talk to the media, it's eerily similar.
Oh, man.
It's the eerily
kind of,
similar.
The kind of, like, snark that they'll use, right. too, where they'll make, like, they'll say something and be like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's like a you smart little.
Like, Dabo and Cal were both kind of self-made in a certain way because Cal went out and he didn't really work for, you know, he worked at Kansas for a little bit and then branched out, took the UMass job.
He got very lucky. He got lucky with the five-star coaching camp that he made good connections, and people thought highly of him. But he really got that on almost
Dabo
nothing.
Had that similar because he went to school at Alabama. So he had all those Alabama coaching connections, and he either got out and they called and said, you need to get back here to Alabama and be an assistant. He goes to Clemson. Things go haywire there. He gets the job. Job just kind of falls in his lap. And he just turned – similar to what Cal did – and it's similar to what kind of Cal did at Memphis and UMass together, where it was nothing, and he turned them into a legit national title contender, and that's what Dabo did there.
Well, and the thing with Dabo at Clemson, too, that we were having a conversation before a spring practice session with some of the media folks who were around. It was like, because I believe Dabo, between the time that Kentucky beat him in the Music City Bowl in 07 and then lost to them in 09, or in 06 and 09, excuse me, there was a time when Kentucky got, like, in between where Dabo got the job from Bowden. And you were like, who's this? They hired their receivers coach to be their head coach?
Right.
What the hell are they thinking? And in the decade since, they've turned into a juggernaut.
Mm-hmm. And then when you look at some of the results, it's eerily similar. Like, Dabo's 2-2 in title games. Cal's 1-2, and then I think you can throw the 15 team in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because that was a title game.
And then, like, all these 10, 11 win seasons in a row, and now you've got, since 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, it's 14 win seasons. So they're a national title contender every year.
Yeah.
Thank Kentucky, and basketball is a national title contender every year.
And here's where they're really similar to, is the way they recruit.
Right.
Like, the years when you're like...
Well, the culture they've been, like, everybody wants to go to Clemson because it's the greatest culture. And I think in the... a way, Cal's built this Kentucky, like, La Familia, this Kentucky effect.
Brotherhood. Right. Yeah.
Where it's just like, this is the cool place to be. This isn't for everybody.
Right, right.
This isn't for everybody, but if it's for you, there's no better place to be.
And
they people have copied off Cal's model, and now you see people copying off Dabo's model about how it's family, it's the culture. It's like, the culture is a word in college football we talk about a lot, but it wasn't, what they people really mean by the culture is build what Clemson has. We need Clemson's culture.
The way that – I think it was this year Clemson had five or six guys that were number one at their position that committed to Clemson. It's like the 14 class
the number one player at every spot.
Yeah. I mean, the only difference is that for Kentucky – we like our guy. My buddy's a barber. He always jokes. He's like, dude, us Kentuckians, we love our fast-talking Italian coaches that wear the really nice suits. We love it. Between Pitino, Calipari, like, that's we think basketball.
Patrino. People love Patrino for a long – I mean, we can talk about these last few years. But Louisville fans, that first stint, they love that SOB more than anything in the world.
And down at Clemson, Dabo is just the most perfect – he is perfect for that fan that wears their vest on a cool October morning, and then after they have a day of drinking cold beers, they go to church on Sunday and wear their that same Clemson pullover.
Right.
They talk
little Clemson,
and they got that accent. It just plays it up perfectly. I mean, Dabo lived with his mama.
Right.
Until, you know, through college, he lived with his mama. He's a good old boy. You know, like, they are perfect for that program.
And then you look at assistant coaches. Like, Kenny Payne, he's not leaving.
No.
Like, he's fine. He's fat and happy here at Kentucky. He's not going to take a lesser job.
Oh, just like Brent Venables. He ain't going nowhere.
Venables, yeah. Venables,
they both got their kids on the damn team.
Right.
I mean, it is eerily, eerily similar. And I think, good job. I'd high-five you, but, you know, social distancing. We got about 4 feet in between us. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not six, but. Good enough.
And I have to mention one before we get out of here. I stole this from Mark Ennis, but Archie Miller, Will Muschamp. We can get out on that one.
Oh, man. I hope y'all enjoyed this. I hope this has been a pleasant distraction for the last hour and 10 minutes. When we come back for another edition of 11 Personnel next week, we're going to be talking about our favorite games as Kentucky football fans. And we're going to discuss in depth and how Kentucky transformed from an air raid team that changed college football 20 years ago to a team that only ran the damn football.
And who knows? Maybe that can have a lasting effect.
Who knows? We will find out more down the road. Until then, thank you all so much for listening. DrinkSword.com, Sword Performance, thank you so much for sponsoring this podcast. Stay safe, Big Blue Nation. Go Cats, and safely go Kroger.